Hey, Bears fans, this is Cole Wright from Marquee Sports Network. Now, we know you can never get enough Bears, so join us Tuesday for Bear Essentials, a recap of this week's Bears action and analysis of the week ahead. Then, we'll re-air this week's Bears game at 7 o'clock on Marquee Sports Network.
So much going on today. Let's talk to our great friend Michael Wilbon, who joins us every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. We'll get you updated. He's brought to you by Waddles Guys.
That is correct. HawkAuto.com, Ford, Chevy, Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep, Ram, Subaru, Cadillac, Mazda, and VW, all in one place. HawkAuto.com, where Chicagoland sounds big!
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody? Guess what today is?
It's Wilbon Day.
Woo-hoo!
Chicago native Michael Wilbon, host of Pardon the Interruption with Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN Chicago.
To the fourth quarter they go, and Juju Smith-Schuster just caught a touchdown pass from Ben Roethlisberger. It is now 19-7.
We'll see if Trent Dilfer and Dante Stallworth can respond.
Steelers on top 19-7 over the Ravens on Wednesday afternoon. Football. You digging some afternoon Wednesday football, Michael?
No.
It's been hideous.
I mean, I wouldn't know. I mean, I'm out in Arizona. There's no PTI today because of all the college basketball. It's not possible to be a more beautiful day here in the valley in Arizona. I was out playing golf with a couple of Highland Park guys.
Ooh.
And here in Desert Mountain, I've there was no way I was going to rearrange my schedule on an off day and a beautiful one in Arizona to watch the Steelers and the Ravens. Sorry.
That may have been your best decision in calendar year 2020 not to watch it, because it's been awful football.
Really?
It's been poorly played across the board.
Well, but those two teams don't play pretty games anyway against each other.
Yeah, this has been more about just being sloppy and less about just being a slugfest. It's been awful. You spent your time wisely.
Glad, man. I missed it. Glad I missed it.
Michael, Waddle says the perfect time for Bears football these days Wednesday afternoon.
Yeah.
It would, but instead they're on Thursday night, Sunday night, Monday night, Sunday national. They've had four straight nationally televised games and lost all four of them.
We should be Wednesday afternoons at 1 on the Lifetime channel.
That's where we should be. Not for primetime club, right? The Bears, Chicago Bears, no question.
Are you? So we're asking this question from Bears fans. Final five games of the year. What are you rooting for? Are you rooting for losses or wins?
You know, I'm not a guy who identifies with ownership first. I identify, and I've known a great many owners. I identify with the players more so, and I don't ever want to wish that on anybody, losing, because I suspect I was decent enough to have great wins and great losses in just a high school and then weekend summer league, athletic life, and I know what that feels like, and I don't wish it on people. But man, I may be rethinking it. I mean, whatever it's going to take. To shake up the Bears to realize at the top that they don't have what it takes at the top is what I guess I'm rooting for. You know, I'm rooting for a humane ending or in that you can't bring this cast of people back at the top and expect to be any better.
Do you think, Michael, that George has come to that conclusion himself? And I know you haven't talked to him more than likely, but
I haven't.
But do you think, based on what you've seen, that the person in charge of the ownership group has seen enough himself to know that even if you go on a little bit of a run here against the bad Lions team and then the Texans and the Jags and the Vikings, that none of it matters until you make significant change?
If he didn't come to that conclusion, even if he was sitting in a bank vault by himself with a flat screen and nothing was in there but enough air to breathe and light to see the television, if you see your franchise come out like that against your hated rival, your most hated rival, and you play like that on national TV in front of the nation where you're down 40-7 or whatever, I don't even know what it was, you have to come to that conclusion. You have to. Or you shouldn't be running it.
Are you a believer that they value the games against the Green Bay Packers have more impact on how they feel?
All I can say to that, Tommy, great question, is I hope so. Because it means more to the fan base. If you're responsive to your fan base at all, you feel that. Not only that, we're talking about a 100-year rivalry. 100 years. And they stink up the joint like that? Why? Like if you were just a weakened competitive person, that should upset you.
Yeah.
If you're running one of the flagship franchises in the National Football League or anywhere in sports in America, then you gotta call people in and say, what is it you're doing? But actually, there's no answer that could satisfy me in that regard now. I mean, the people at the top of the Bears pyramid, the football operation, they have to go. They've had enough time. And I don't care what the record is. I don't care if the record is, I don't know, 26-17 or whatever it is. I don't care what it is. They're now a laughingstock of the league. I'm not laughing at it. I'm a fan of the franchise for my whole life, for more than 50 years. I'm not laughing, but I know what everybody else is doing. And it's not like they're laughing and they're overreaching. Is that reaching? I mean, the selections, the choices made by the general manager and what is happening with the team on a daily basis are, that's not, if you're just going to turn on the lights and make money in the National Football League, and I don't believe that about George. I don't believe that he sees it that way. You could do that and justify it. But if you want to compete, if you're out here being compared in your own division to the Packers, and you're being compared to what other franchises are going out there every week and dying to win, then you can't have what you've got on the field every week. You can't have it.
Yeah, Michael, I've been preaching that they have to start at the top, that the same way of hiring a new GM, a new coach, drafting a new quarterback, the process cannot be the same that you've been doing because it hasn't been bearing fruit. So if you want to take Ted Phillips, who's been there for 35 years, and stick him in another wing of the building, I don't need him fired. I just need him out of the interview process.
Right. Yeah.
So let me ask you this question. So as we've described, like, George wants to win. I think all three of us agree on that.
We agree. Sure he does. Of course he does.
So the best way to describe it is, in my world, is it's a football family that doesn't know football very well. So if you're George and now Ted's not advising you and you're going out on a information seeking tour of who could help office, who are you starting with as far as networking? Who's your first call to?
Because I'm not covering the NFL like I used to. I mean, I would have a definitive answer or four or five guys that I could feel confident that that's the way to go. I don't know those four or five guys anymore. But when you are working in the industry, as he's working in the industry every day, and you have access to people who can tell you are the best executives to go to. So, you know what? I'd start someplace that's not even there. And people think I was joking about this. You can start with other captains of industry. We're talking about something that is not unique to football. That's a down-the-line thing, right? Just as you cannot have this general manager and this coach selecting the next quarterback and running the next draft and doing all those things, you need to start higher than that. Like what I was saying about start with Theo, I wasn't kidding.
I'm talking about
starting with an executive who has won a championship in his sport, in his field of play, and saying, hey, not recommend me the new general manager. How do you attack this?
Right.
Where do you start? Do you start with a new president of football operations? Do you just start with a general manager? Where do you go? Do you pull a CEO away from another industry? Where do you go for the answers to the most important and pressing questions that we're facing? And I would go to Theo for that.
You don't even have to hire.
Right,
you don't even have to hire him. You just ask him if he's willing to have a series of communications with you.
You hire him in the short term.
Yeah, a consultant.
You know he would be. That this is what you do. Then if you want to do that with people in the football industry, I mean, okay, I guess I'm not sure that people within the industry are willing to give you you know, their best answers, if they're still competitive every week, season in, season out, and they're still doing this, I'm not sure that those people, you know, unless you're willing to hire somebody on a consultant basis who's just newly out, you know, if didn't they talk? Did they talk to Bill Polian the last time they did this?
Not Polian.
No, they talked to Ernie
of course.
Okay, I'm talking to Bill of people who are football people who are still close enough to it, even though they haven't been in it the last whatever 36 months. Bill Polian. You don't have to ask Bill, who would you hire? Where would you start to make this franchise, you know, where it should be? Put this franchise where it should be.
Well, Michael, so, I said I would even call, like, think about where Rocky Wirtz took over the Hawks. His dad put that franchise where no one cared about them. They were the worst front.
Yeah.
And he wasn't a hockey guy when he took over, but he knew he had to do things differently. Where did he turn and how did he figure it out? George is a ticket holder at the United Center when we can have people. Huge Hawks fan. Call Rocky, too, and say, Rocky, where do I start? How do I figure out where to change and what to keep?
Yes. But by the way, you call all these people that we've been suggesting. All of them. This is what you do. This is your franchise. You're a football family. This is important to the founder of the National Football League. It's important for the Bears to not be a joke, a national joke. And so, and you know, this point of, look, I just told you I played golf with guys from Highland Park. What do you think we talked about for 3 out of the 4 hours?
Bad Bears football.
Talk about the Bears. Bad Bears football. And the first thing they said to me was, do you think Georgia wants to win? I said, of course Georgia wants to win. But wanting to win and knowing how to win are completely different things. I think that the great majority of the people who are stewards of these franchises, particularly the historic ones, of course they want to win. But that doesn't mean they know how to go about it. And that doesn't, it also doesn't necessarily mean, although I'm not ready to question this individually in Georgia's case, I don't know whether losing kills them as much as they like winning. Like the people that I have grown up in this business being around and covering, the one thing I know they all have in common is they hate losing more than they like winning.
Coaches say that.
And so
many coaches say that,
but so do executives. And and I'm thinking of the Pat Rileys and the Joe Gibbses and the John Thompsons. And, you know, I'm thinking of people like that, but I they're executives who are the same way. How do we get those people? How do we get people who in this day and age are responsive and understand the market they're dealing with, the product they're trying to not just put on the field, but sell, the goodwill they're trying to create in the community in which this franchise has operated for 100 years. That ain't Ryan Pace. It isn't. And to me, he gets as much blame, if not more, than Nagy.
You're not the biggest Nagy fan. Were you upset at what he said at the press conference yesterday?
I don't listen to what he says anymore because it's foolishness.
That makes
sense.
You know, when you start off with small themes and your team has lost 5 in a row and you were 5-1 and you went out there at 5-1 and you pleaded your case, you begged for people to stay with you, to hang on with you. You are this good. That's what you said. And now you look worse every week in losing in a 19th century way. And so what he says is foolishness. It really shows that he's not a head coach material. He may become that. Look, Bill Belichick wasn't that the first time around. Maybe Nagy needed this one, and the next time around, he's going to know better. He's going to surround himself with better people. He's going to be harder on himself. But right now, he's not head coach material. I listened to him right after the game, and it's like, are you serious? You don't even get, you don't seem to get the death spiral your team is in and that you are presiding over. And so I can't watch him anymore.
Okay. I think I'm going to get under your skin coming up next.
Oh, boy.
And then I want you to give a tribute to two maybe former Chicago sports athletes. All that with Wilbon coming up next.
Coming up next.
Waddle and Sylvie on ESPN 1000, Chicago's home for sports. Bring Waddle and Sylvie with you at home or in your office. Just tell your smart speaker to play ESPN 1000.
Michael Wilbon joins us each and every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. A lot to get to. I want to bring up your cats, and I'm going to poke the bear here.
Uh-oh.
Poke the cat. I'm going to poke the cat. With big-time college athletics, Michael, which your cats have turned into with this beautiful athletic facility on the lakefront and what the progression from 1995, through 2020, when it was the cute, cuddly cat that first showed up in the 95 season, the Rose Bowl season, to what Randy Walker did, to now what Fitz has turned this program into. It's big-time college football. Why are you guys always like, aw shucks, when you lose a game that you should win? Why don't you guys want more than just simply, aw shucks, we lost a tough game to Michigan
State? I don't know that not all of us are aw shucks, Sylvie. If you would have heard my language last Saturday, you would not accuse me of being aw shucks. I think it takes a lot of years, more than 25 of them, to change expectations that have existed for 100 years. So, you know, not everybody feels like I do. I told you guys going into this, what worries me is we don't play all that well with expectations. That's still new to us. That's why, in part of it. It's still new to have expectations. I thought that week that we spent talking about Reese Davis and all that stuff, it was fun, but I was worried as hell about it. Mm-hmm. Because we don't play well with expectations. Our men's programs have not done that well. You know, we've scaled new heights. We've gotten to, like you, just as you pointed out, I wouldn't trade what Fitz has done for anything, because I know how hard it is. I have a sense of how hard it is. Only he and his staff knows how hard it is. But it takes a while. And that's why I kept telling people when they were talking about Michigan State, you're going to run the table, Michigan State, Minnesota, Illinois. I'm like, calm down, Sparky. Just sort of have a sense of, you know, I remember that game. We had a bad spot on a fourth down against Ohio State in Evanston when both teams were 5-0.
Right.
And, you know, that killed me. But this loss to me was worse. The Michigan loss, let me not say it was worse. It hurt me more. The loss to Michigan State. One, I was worried about it when I thought a lot of people weren't appropriately worried. And two, I thought it was a chance to have transformational improvement, like a transformational event. If we got to the playoff, that would be a transformational event for Northwestern. But it's hard, man. It's hard. You know what? And I'm gonna answer you by being a little bit arrogant here.
Okay.
In part, how many schools in the Power Five do you think have a have a medical school student on their roster, active roster?
Stanford?
Try again.
Duke? Boston College?
Try again.
It's just Northwestern.
That's right. And I mentioned that because, and I'm going to anger some people now, and I don't really care. We don't have a recreation major. Okay? We don't. Yet, we're getting three-star athletes now. I think we're getting a couple of fours. And Fitz is steadily building on what he's already built. And you mentioned Randy Walker. When Randy Walker left him, and it's not all shucks. It comes with and if you sat in a room with people who are involved with administrating all this stuff, i.e., trustees, you might see a little. First of all, you're not going to see any disappointment with the program. You can see disappointment with a game lost, but it's not all shucks anymore. But you know what I don't want? I don't want to be a Nebraska program that got tired of 9-3 and it wasn't good enough. And how many times have they been 9-3 since they let that guy go?
Sure, sure.
I don't want to be a Michigan program for whom 10-2 isn't good enough, and then now you got to run out one of your own Hall of Fame Michigan alums, which is going to happen. So there's a balancing act here, and it's a delicate balancing act, Sylvie. And that question is totally legit. But I want to have some perspective, being as close to this as you can get without being in the program, as an alum and now a trustee and somebody who's intimately interested and involved in the support of the athletic teams. So I don't want to get crazy, but I don't want to be all shucks either.
I would say, too, not to the same degree, but Notre Dame is kind of in the same category, in my humble opinion, that Notre Dame maybe can get some of the more talented recruits in because of their reputation over the course of decades and centuries. But, like, their standards, and I'm not saying everything is pristine, but they do things a little bit differently than some of the other schools as well. So when Notre Dame gets out there and is the number two team in the country, I recognize that. Maybe more so than some other people do.
Yeah, I recognize it. And while I take my little meant-to-be-funny shots at Notre Dame, Notre Dame is still in that top five constantly of graduating students.
Yes.
That play in all those programs. And I told them, we are number one in that right now. And I'm going to take the number one and the 5-1. Would I like to be 6-0? Damn, you guys know I would be. It's difficult. It's more difficult. For anybody who rolls their eyes at me from other schools and they don't think it's as difficult, I say, I'll tell you what, let's go ask your coach if he'd like to have our requirements to get in the school or his. And let's see how many times they trade. And it shuts people up.
Yeah, that's my point. Listen, somebody that's close to the Notre Dame program that I know told me that, I guess the rule is, if you miss two classes, you fail the class.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know that that's the case.
I have total admiration for Notre Dame because of that reason, Tommy. Total admiration for Notre Dame. And total admiration that now Northwestern can compete with them in both areas. So I'm with that. And so, you know, before I go nuts over losing to Michigan State, it's like, all right, I'm angry I wouldn't even talk to people for like 3 days. I was angry Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday as well. And then it's like, okay, now let me sit here and make some sense of what's going on, what we still have a chance to do this season, this weird, crazy, bizarre, regrettable season in large, and what it is that we're accomplishing and what it is that the program has done. I mean, just think. Think about this. When we have even been having a discussion about disappointment in a loss 6 games into a Big Ten season, would Northwestern have been the subject of that conversation even since the Rose Bowl and 10 years later? And the answer is no.
That's always my argument, though, is like you guys should be now more up to date in that regard. You know, but
I think we are. I think it doesn't. It doesn't take 5 years, Sylvie. I mean, even look at Duke. You know, Duke basketball. And I'm thinking about, you know, Mike Krzyzewski and Duke basketball and how they took their lumps, even though those lumps came in the tournament for them. But it was a full 12, you know, years or so before I think K won and had this where he wanted and had it on at a level which he was going to consistently keep it there. That stuff takes a long time. And Duke basketball had a history of success and winning. Northwestern football had none of that. God knows Northwestern basketball. We didn't have any tradition of any of it. So even Mike Krzyzewski was able to rekindle. This was a fire started from scratch, dude, with two sticks.
Yeah. Really quick,
in terms of football and basketball.
Really quick, because we're up against the clock. Joakim Noah looks like he's retiring, and Kyle Schwarber could be on the way out of the Cubs. Say something nice about both of those guys.
Well, you know, Kyle Schwarber was my neighbor in Streeterville, in my building, for a couple of years. I just love him as a person. He got a World Series ring. How many other Cubs for 100 years or so had that? And he helped get it. He helped that rebuild, that 2015 season, and obviously 2016. And then Noah was part of a team that was built the right way, that was unfortunate. And that Derrick Rose got hurt. Do I know they would have beaten LeBron James in that time? No, I don't. But that, when I used to say to you guys, they built the right team. Noah was at the center, literally and figuratively, of that. And the guy gave his body, he gave his legs, he gave his knees to the Bulls in Chicago. He loved playing in Chicago. I know the off-the-record conversations I had with Noah. And so it's just, I feel bad for those guys, for Lou Alvang, for Joakim Noah, and obviously, first and foremost, for Derrick Rose, in that they couldn't finish what they got close to. But he was part of something. It'll be remembered much like those great teams that didn't break through finally with Love and Walker and Sloan and Van Leer and Bullwinkle. It'll be remembered like those teams. Terrific teams that couldn't get all the way through.
Great stuff, Michael. Enjoy your week, okay?
Thanks, Mike.
All right, you guys. Good talking to you.
There you go. Michael Wilbon every Wednesday at 5 o'clock. Also on Wednesdays, we have Mark Jean Greco in studio. Thanks to Chicago Cut Steakhouse. Marky joins us coming up next.
This is the home of Waddle and Sylvie for the ride home.
Weekdays 2 to 6 on ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
Mark Jean Greco inside the First Midwest Bank studio. You can watch it all on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN1000 Chicago. Were you hand dancing in there? What are you doing? What was that?
What is
hand
that?
Dancing? That's code for what?
I don't know.
You were dancing with your hands there.
Well, Twitch. You're promoting Twitch
or something.
Yeah. Were you doing hand puppets?
Little sock puppets.
Yeah?
Yeah.
You're dressed like you're going to a formal.
No, I'm doing all shows
black,
this week.
Black tie, white shirt, black suit.
Yeah,
look great.
Got to run downstairs and do the big old 6 o'clock show, you know.
Is that what they call it now in the business? The big old six o'clock show.
You're watching this horrible Baltimore-Pittsburgh game?
Yeah, it is. You know what we've said? We've come to the conclusion that Wednesday at 1:30 or 2 o'clock is a perfect time for Bears football.
Hey, look, the NFL is determined to plow this through the pandemic no matter what. Reschedule, get every game in. Half this Ravens team, these guys weren't even on the club last week. Lamar Jackson sitting out. RG3 gets hurt, although he looked pretty good running.
It's just this
convoluted mess. It's like pickup football, but the commission's going to get them all in. And, you know, this whole thing about who tested positive, who didn't, you knew about these guys, but what the heck? I mean, it's so clouded now. It's really crazy.
Well, I think they've actually, the rules they've put in place are pretty strict, hence what you saw from the Denver Broncos, right?
Yeah, they wanted to make an example of the Broncos for sure. They didn't have to go that hard on them, but, you know.
Did you guys see that Malik Andrews was reporting of all of the NBA tests that were done? I think 48 NBA players tested positive.
Going into training camp?
I believe that. Wasn't that the case, Chris? You and I were talking about this. It was 48 guys.
See, Golden State had to shut it down.
Wow. I think so.
The bubble works so well during this contracted makeshift season. And now, with only 8 weeks rest for the Lakers, they got to do it all over again. And people are going to be lax, and they're not going to really be focused because...
Inside the bubble, they were able to execute this plan.
Yeah.
But if you're not inside the bubble, I think in the NBA season, you're playing, a lot of games. I think they're going to have significantly more issues to deal with.
I think they're going to have to rethink it. Instead of 72 games, it's going to be contracted again. They might have to go with a mid-season bubble.
By the way,
if baseball could do it, why can't basketball do it?
Well, I think they're just going to see how the Bulls get off. If they get off to a slow start, then they'll just say, you're not playing the rest.
Well, remember
of the
early in you're right, Sylvie.
Needless Bulls joke. The arrow's pointing up, Mark. Why do you got to take shots?
But you remember that, there were several games, whether it was the Cardinals or it was the Marlins, that had to be canceled.
Especially early. Yes.
Well, look what happened. Look at Notre Dame's in the ACC title game because the conference rearranged everything and said, you know what, we're just going to go with 9 games.
I was going to talk to you two hockey experts. What is going on with the NHL?
Silent.
They haven't even,
you've got a couple owners saying we're going to start in January, and then you've got the front office saying, whoa, maybe February. There's still no plan. And people like Patrick Kane and other superstars who lead their teams are like, hey, we need to go back in this collective bargaining here. What are we getting into?
Well, the problem is the players feel like they agreed. Remember, we were complimenting the NHL that they came up with a labor resolution.
Right.
And we were complimenting the league. And now the league wants to go back on some of the agreements.
Of course.
And they want to escrow more money. And the players are like, dudes, we just agreed with you to your stipulations 3 months ago. Now all of a sudden you want to take food off our plate.
Can I just say one thing?
Just one.
All you youngsters out there, don't ever trust management on any level. Whether you're a player or a broadcaster.
Well, Mark, honestly,
or whatever.
Honestly, you can say, but they had a collectively bargained agreement.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, that's as ironclad as you can get for an employee. You know, I mean, when that starts to break down and they're not honoring what you have collectively bargained, now you really have issues.
Yes.
You know what's been...
Players are pissed.
Yeah, they should.
The historic problem is a lot of players don't even pay attention to the agreement. They don't pay attention to their team reps. And then ownership and league management tries to take advantage of that. Then, you know, the NHL and NFL and NBA lawyers will find loopholes. And it'll go round and round and round. Nothing's ironclad.
But weren't you, like, that's why I was so surprised to hear that they had come to terms with a collective bargaining agreement extension, not even knowing what the financial issues going forward were going to be. Like, I was shocked to hear, and you're right, Sylvie, we were all like, high five to the NHL.
Yeah,
the
that
players.
Was quick. Yeah. That's what we
but
said.
But it's the owners who've gone back on it.
No,
and that's
I know.
The thing. The players are like, look, in the middle of the worst time, we agreed to a lot of things with you guys. You guys should have had the vision that this could have gone longer and that maybe we wouldn't get crowds back even next year. That's on you for coming to the agreement in the middle of a pandemic.
It shows you how stupid people are, really.
What else did we want to do with you today? Any other Bear stuff that we could get that out of the way with Nagy speaking?
Just listening to Mitch today, seriously, it sounded like a clueless rookie saying I have to work on basic miscues. Okay? It's the point now where I don't know
what
to say.
Take care of the ball and stay ahead of the change. Wasn't it a lot of that stuff?
It was take care of the ball, don't fumble it, and, you know, don't throw into double coverage. But, you know, we had that play and we wanted it, and they made a better play than we did.
No. Yeah. Listen, let me go back to that play. And it pissed me off when I saw it.
I know.
And then heard what they had to say. If you go back and look at the tape of that play, the first interception, it's first and 10 on the Green Bay 38,
right.
And the Packers are leading 13-3, and the coach tells Catherine Tappan at half we're okay with it because we were all set to do a shot play. There is absolutely no excuse for the quarterback to make the read he made and for the coach to accept it. Because if you watch the play, there was nowhere for the free safety to go other than to spin, which is standard coverage, and get on top of the receiver who was being trailed by the cornerback. There was no way the quarterback could have read it any other way. There was nowhere else for the free safety to go because there was no other route threatening the other side of the field.
Right.
This is football 101, and you can't accept it from the coach or from the quarterback. So for them to tell me that we're just going to take a shot, like, go back and look at the film. The safety has one place to go because there's only one receiver that's 15 or 20 yards downfield.
Yeah.
There's no chance the quarterback can read the safety going anywhere but where he went. It's just, it's insanity.
It's even more absurd. Yesterday, the assistant coaches spoke. DeFilippo said, he actually said, Mitch had a good explanation for the mistakes he made. Even when he was wrong, he understood why he was wrong. So we're going to give him a little gold star because...
Can we go to the other interception?
He had a good answer
for... Do you
want
to play the Orlovsky thing here?
All the wrong place. Well, Orlovsky was great today.
That one was that mistake that he made there with his technique and his fundamentals, That pales in comparison to the decisions.
Mm-hmm.
The second interception is thrown into triple coverage where Allen Robinson finds himself in a man coverage doing a 15-yard dig route. Like, that's football 101. And again, the one thing that just baffles me more than other was the first interception where they were fine with taking a shot. And then in the same breath, he tells Catherine Tappan, well, one of our problems is his time of possession. What, your lopsided time of possession because your quarterback is throwing into double coverage and you're accepting it.
You had the worst combination.
I just had a mini stroke.
Yeah, that was good, though. I liked it.
I'm shocked that you're getting this upset still within a game.
I am, too.
He's got veins coming out of the side of his head. You have some color for a change.
Well, that's just high blood pressure.
Yeah, right. But this is a horrible combination of a coach who's in way over his head, who overthinks everything and outcoaches himself, with an overreached quarterback who never should have been anywhere near the first round.
The Orlovsky thing, maybe we'll play that for you coming up.
Yeah, he was
it wasn't
great.
On an interception. It was on that incompletion with Cole Kmet where it was almost a fumble, and then they ruled it incomplete.
He almost had an aneurysm screaming about that.
I did.
Waddle, is he okay?
I don't know.
You may need to take care of him during the
break. I don't get it. That's what's so frustrating.
We'll play the Orlovsky. I want to play you. You're the big fan of the Ding Dong Ditch with Carmen, aren't you, Mark?
Absolutely. Yeah.
We have a holiday parody song.
I saw him yesterday, and I told him, you need to write a song about you chasing down that kid in your neighborhood.
Somebody did.
And he confirmed, good, because he confirmed. The kid was like 13 or 14. He wasn't 10, and he was all upset.
That's still younger than I thought.
Well, a 14, come on. And he was upset because his buddies made him do
it. When you were 14, you were hijacking cars and smoking cigarettes.
Yeah. Right. We're smashing windows.
Right. Different.
Yeah.
It's different.
Road tripping while hitching a ride.
Right. No, there's a rough 14. Yeah. There's a rough 14, and then there's a sheltered 14.
All right. So we'll play the Ding Dong Ditch song, a couple of other of the best holiday parody songs. And Dan Orlovsky, remember, he was a big Mitch fan. He really went after him today on the film.
He's seen the light.
Yeah, we'll play that for you coming up next. The 5 o'clock hour of Waddle and Sylvie is brought to you by my guys at the Home Loan Expert. Lower your rate, pay off your credit cards, get caught up on your bills, stick some cash in the bank. Start the new year off right with a simple refinance at thehomeloanexpert.com.
What is your name, please?
Waddle and Sylvie.
Follow us on the gram at Waddle and Sylvie and at ESPN underscore Chicago. This is ESPN 1000.
Chicago's home for sports.
It is now a final. The Steelers beat the Ravens 19-14.
Tommy's still on a rampage.
I was just showing Mark the video of it.
Oh yeah,
and it's crazy.
That was the one to Mooney, right?
Yes,
or to the other team. I should say.
There was nowhere for Savage to go.
Montgomery was the safety valve, so he should have checked down to him. But he was on the right side.
He's right there.
Yeah, he's on
Montgomery's
the right
wide
side.
Open.
Check it down.
A short game,
right? But there's nobody. There's no safety valve on the left either.
Right.
So your point is the safety just moves over.
Look, those are Packers right there. Those are three Packers on the left side of the field. There's only one place. If you throw the check down,
we're doing radio.
It's first and 10 on the 38 of the Packers. Yeah. You should be looking check down. If the shot play's there and he's in single coverage, go shot play.
It's simple.
If not,
it's
don't
easy.
Waste the possession.
You gotta
get it
let
to
it
your
go.
Check down.
You got to let it go.
Let me play this from Dan Orlovsky. Then we'll have some fun with the holiday parody songs. Chris, you don't have to play the whole thing because he goes on about that one play. If you guys remember, this is the red zone play. They're looking to Cole Kmet. Cole Kmet had it for a second, lost it. First they ruled it a fumble, then they ruled it an incompletion. But as Orlovsky shows, this should have been an easy touchdown if he leads Kmet the way he's supposed to. And remember, Orlovsky's a guy who was singing the praises of Mitch, but listen to the way he just rips his technique.
Trubisky, you had all this time off. All you had to do was fix some minor flaws. Your feet in the gun. Motion Jimmy Graham over. Okay, this is Kmet. Great, you widen the end just a little bit. The outside backer just a little bit. You're just going to run stick. Okay? Just get your feet set to throw quick game. Watch just the mechanics from the shotgun. First of all, catch the snap and stand straight up. I mean, you're standing straight up. Your both feet look like they're off the ground. You should be ready like a pitcher at the top of his motion to drive that football. And then look at the left leg again. Completely locked out. This is wide open. Throw the ball right there. Like, this is easy stuff. You're too good of an athlete to allow this to be the downfall of why you won't make it. Or one of the reasons why. Simple mechanics. This should be harped on. It's a good play design. Can't blame the coach for this. Watch.
Got the little etch-a-sketch
like his feet are both in the air at the same time.
And I think that's a good gist of it because it wasn't the coach's fault. They schemed a guy open.
Good play.
And again, like he wasn't. It's simple quarterback mechanics that still the kid who's been out for a while doesn't understand.
And And listen, it wasn't his most inaccurate throw either. But Dan's point is if you are exercising better mechanics,
it's a pitch and
catch. That's a pitch and catch that there is no way that you don't throw it in a better spot.
It's simple. It's easy.
By the way, Orlovsky's going to be on with Cap tomorrow to talk more about
that.
He's really good. Mark Jean Greco brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse. As always, David Flom and Mandy Moore. They'll roll out the red carpet for you. Make sure you take out from them these days. LaSalle and the River, and we're going to have a huge party at Chicago Cut Steakhouse when times are good.
Blow that thing out as soon as we're allowed back in.
Mark, did you hear what the grand prize is for the Holiday Parody Song Contest?
$7,000.
No, what? Almost. Oh. $1,000? It'll be $7,000 if you give us six.
Yes.
Okay. If you give us $6,000, $7,000 prize.
Okay, I'm in.
$1,000, not bad. That's a good prize.
$1,000 is pretty good. Can he screwball whiskey with that?
That's what you get per 5:30. Come on.
Yeah. Those days are over. I'm working for nothing now.
You are right about screwball peanut butter whiskey because here's what the five finalists are going to get: a $100 gift card to American Sale, a $100 gift card to Lou Malnati's, three bottles of Screwball peanut butter whiskey,
wow,
and a $100 gift card to the fine Screwball peanut butter whiskey.
What would peanut butter pizza taste like?
Pizza with peanut butter.
Yeah.
Same. Yeah. Yeah. It's like what would pineapple pizza taste like?
Yeah. Don't fruit the pizza.
I'm just saying.
Okay.
So thanks to our fine sponsors, Miller Lite, American Sale, your Chicagoland Toyota dealers, Lou Malnati's Pizza, Screwball Peanut Butter Whiskey. Make sure you enter the contest by sending your holiday parody songs to ESPNParody.com. So who is this for Marky that we need to play doing the Ding Dong Ditch song?
Jason Holworth, Ding Dong Ditch Carm. This is from yesterday.
Okay.
Take a listen.
This is what happens when you screw with the DeFalcos.
I'm not messing around.
Ding dong ditch, ding dong ditch, ding dong ditch car. He's watching TV, and then the doorbell rings. Punk kid jumps out, scares the crap out of car. Now the neighborhood chase has begun. Ding dong ditch, ding dong ditch, it's all gone wrong. He lost his mind, and he started to whine. Won't be so funny when I catch one of you. Hey, good luck, old man.
Because they challenge.
Friday night time is the right time to chase those kids away. But maybe next time it'll be a crime when they come back with two dozen eggs. Giddy up, kid, now pick up your feet, or Carm will make you cry. Don't get caught, cause he'll call your mom. Let's go screw with him. Yeah, it's that old man. Let's go ding dong ditch car.
Good luck. And that's all I needed. I was off to the races.
Like a bandit.
Yeah, I teach that punk a lesson. You better believe it. You dork. I mean, you're chasing down teenagers.
Hey, he finished strong there.
Yes, he did.
You know, like the lyrics weren't rhyming for me. You know?
It was still a good story.
He finished strong. I like the end of it.
Okay. Yeah.
I like the theme of the song.
How about this Bears one? Can we play the one that we played last in the first segment, Black, just the Everyone Sucks parody song?
Yeah. The Bears suck. Here you go, Mark. Listen to this.
Oh, Mitchell sucks, Nick Foles sucks, and Tyler Bray sucks. Nagy sucks, Ted Phillips sucks, and Ryan Pace sucks. It's no shock, I said shock, we knew it, 5-1. The Bears can't play offense and our season's done. So be strong.
Short and sweet.
Short and sweet is right. The
How
sucks
great was
song.
That?
Yeah. That was wonderful.
Fantastic.
Yes. Boy, you get an orchestra behind that, go in the studio and just pump it up a little bit. Yeah.
We've had some good entries.
You know
so
what?
Far.
You get the Blues Brothers cop mobile with the big speakers. And you just drive
cop mobile.
Yes, I did. And you drive around the city playing that. Drive around Soldier Field on
Tell
Sunday.
Us all, yeah.
That would be the best.
Yeah. All right, Marky, we will see you on Friday.
Marky.
All right.
There's Mark Jean Greco brought to you by Chicago Cut Steakhouse. We've got Black and Abdallah. Our crosstalk with them is brought to you by IDOT. Visit lifeordeathillinois.com. What fun do you guys have for the 2-hour ride?
It's going to be 2 hours of me talking about how I told you all to take that under.
You called the score correct, right?
I did. 19-14. Yeah,
well
I
done.
Did that too. Yeah.
Well done.
Good job, Abdallah. You led me to a couple of bucks.
We're going to talk Bears. We're going to talk a lot of NFL. Anita Marks will join us as well to go around the NFL and talk a little bit of gambling.
Sounds good.
They'll take shots at us in the second hour.
Yeah, oh, you know it. Michael Wilbon, I won't be. I've got my kids, so I can't listen. Sorry, or else I would be loyal. Michael Wilbon and Mark Jean Greco, Fire. Thank you. Thanks to Chris and Adam. They are up in 2 short minutes. For Marky and Waddle, I'm Sylvie. It's ESPN 1000. Have yourself a great Wednesday night.
I am really excited.
That was a big thrill.
Hi, it's Andre Dawson, including myself, Ed Belfour.
Who's getting wild tonight? That's what I'm talking about, baby.
No hi from you.
What?
No hi from you.
I give him more buys than highs.
Waddle, waddle, waddle. Then he waddled away. Waddle, waddle. Till the very next day. Bum, 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 bum.
And thank you to all and to all a good night.